He had met and married my mother in Philadelphia, where their first child, my oldest full brother, Wilfred, was born. They moved from Philadelphia to Omaha, where Hilda and Filbert were born. I was next in line. My mother was 28 when I was born on May 19, 1925, in an Omaha hospital. Then we moved to Milwaukee, where Reginald was born. From infancy, he had a kind of hernia condition which was to handicap him physically for the rest of his life. Louise Little, my mother, was born in Grenada, in the British West Indies, looked like a white woman. Her father was white. She had straight black hair, and her accent did not sound like a Negro's. Of this white father of hers, I know nothing except her shame about it. I remember hearing her say she was glad that she had never seen him. It was, of course, because of him I got my reddish-brown marrony color of skin, and my hair the same color. I was the lightest child in our family. Out in the world later on, in Boston and New York, I was among the millions of Negroes who were insane enough to feel that it was some kind of status symbol to be light-complexioned, the one that was actually fortunate to be born thus. But still later, I learned to hate every drop of that white rapist blood that is in me. Our family stayed only briefly in Milwaukee, for my father wanted to find a place where he could raise our own food and perhaps build a business. The teaching of Marcus Garvey stressed becoming independent of the white man. We went next for some reason to Lansing, Michigan. My father bought a house, and soon, as had been his pattern, he was doing freelance Christian preaching in local Negro Baptist churches, and during the week he was roaming about spreading word of Marcus Garvey. He had begun to lay away savings for the store he had always wanted to own when, as always, some stupid local Uncle Tom Negroes began to funnel stories about his revolutionary beliefs to the local white people. This time, the get-out-of-town threats came from a local hate society called the Black Legion. They wore black robes instead of white. Soon, nearly everywhere my father went, Black Legionnaires were reviling him as an uppity nigger for wanting to own a store, for living outside the Lansing Negro District, for spreading unrest and dissension among the good niggers. As in Omaha, my mother was pregnant again, this time with my youngest sister. Shortly after Yvonne was born came the nightmare night in 1929, my earliest vivid memory. I remember being suddenly snatched awake into a frightening confusion of pistol shots and shouting and smoke and flames. My father had shouted and shot at the two white men who had set the fire and were running away. Our home was burning down around us. We were lunging and bumping and tumbling all over each other trying to escape. My mother, with the baby in her arms, just made it into the yard before the house crashed in, showering sparks. I remember we were outside in the night, in our underwear, crying and yelling our heads off. The white police and firemen came and stood around us, watching as the house burned to the ground. My father prevailed on some friends to clothe and house us temporarily. Then he moved us into another house on the outskirts of East Lansing. In those days, Negroes weren't allowed after dark in East Lansing proper. That's where Michigan State University is located. I related all of this to an audience of students when I spoke there in January 1963 and had the first reunion in a long time with my younger brother Robert, who was there doing postgraduate studies in psychology. I told them how East Lansing harassed us so much that we had to move again, this time 2 miles out of town into the country. This is where my father built for us with his own hands a four-room house. This is where I really begin to remember things, this home where I started to grow up. After the fire, I remember that my father was called in and questioned about a permit for the pistol with which he had shot at the white men who set the fire. I remember that the police were always dropping by our house, shoving things around, just checking, or looking for a gun. The pistol they were looking for, which they never found, and for which they wouldn't issue a permit, was sewed up inside a pillow. My father's .22 rifle and his shotgun, though, were right out in the open. Everyone had them for hunting birds and rabbits and other game. After that, my memories are of the friction between my father and mother. They seem to be nearly always at odds.